Welcome to Car Free Conversations. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of St. Pete without the use of a car. I'm Domenico.
And I'm Sumitra.
And today we are welcoming Ray Delahanty on our podcast. He is the voice of the YouTube channel City Nerd on YouTube and also Nebula, which we'll talk about later on. Before we talk about City Nerd, we're going to have a little icebreaker. This is a special Jeopardy round that we've put together for Ray. It's just a fun little thing. Hello, Ray.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. All right, so let's start this Jeopardy round, and then we'll get into talking about you and your channel and your recent visit to St. Pete, which I'm very excited to talk about. We have three categories for you to choose from, Ray. So we have around the world, that's international transit trivia, coast to coast, that's national transit history, and then we have your digital safari, which is City Nerd trivia from your channel. So we're quizzing you on your own content, which I think will be really fun. So which question do you want first from which category?
How many questions are there in each category?
We have three in each category.
Ooh, okay. Well, let's do around the world first.
All right, around the world.
Do I have to select a dollar amount? Or
no, we'll just randomly assign dollar amounts to each
question. And do I have to phrase in the form of a question?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Of course,
we can do it.
You know the rules.
Yeah.
Okay, first one. This is for $500.
Like literally?
Yeah.
Sweet. I didn't know I was going to make money off this. This is awesome.
These points have no redemption value.
Yeah, okay. By the way. Yes.
We should leave that aside.
They're like 500 car-free St. Pete dollars.
So. Yes.
Okay. I'll Google the conversion rate on that.
Here in Pinellas County, a transit pass is called the Flamingo Card. In Seattle, it's the Orca Card. In Bangkok, it's called the Rabbit Card. And two episodes ago, we mentioned Hong Kong's Octopus Card. This international city offers transit riders an Oyster Card.
That's the question. What is London?
Yep, you got it. Yes.
Cool.
Wow.
I've got one of those somewhere. I don't know. No, never mind.
I also have like just a purse with transit cards in it. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Okay. I'm going to ask you another question from that same category.
Right? Okay. Sounds good. Yeah.
All right. This city officially named one of its streetcars the South Lake Union Line, but locals know it as the South Lake Union Trolley with the unfortunate acronym SLUT.
What is Seattle?
Yes. Yeah, well, doing other stuff.
They sell good t-shirts for that too. So.
Yeah. I loved it when I lived there. I thought
should we continue with this category?
Sure. Yeah.
So this is the last question in this category. This city is home to Africa's only subway system.
Oh. Wow. I actually don't know this, and there are a lot of good guesses. I'm gonna say what is Cairo?
You're not, yeah.
You got it.
That's right. Okay, good. I thought it was right because I'm pretty sure I looked at it at some point and it's like, oh yeah, there are subways there.
But also surprising because I would think that either Johannesburg or Pretoria would have them too.
Yeah.
Or like Nairobi would have them too.
But yeah. Or maybe like Casablanca.
Right. That's
like
true.
Anywhere. Yeah. Because like they have high speed rail. Yeah. So you would think maybe they would also have. Well,
Casablanca has streetcars, but they're just not under, they don't have subways, right?
Yeah.
All right, what's your next category, Ray? We've got around the world or your digital safari?
I did around the world.
We just did.
Oh, sorry. Did your digital safari or coast to coast?
Let's go to digital safari.
All right, let's
see. We'll come back to Coast to Coast. This is fun. We could just do this for the whole hour. I love this.
All right. In your top 10 list of North America's best airports, transit connections, this airport ranked at number 5, a tie with Mexico City. Name the airport and bonus, the travel time from the airport transit station to the city center.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, that's like the, that's like one of the first 5 videos I ever made. And I struggle to remember. Yeah, like I'm definitely not gonna get this correct, but I will guess. I guess Atlanta, and then I'm gonna say 22 minutes.
Well, you almost got the minutes right. It's 24 minutes, but it's Chicago Midway.
Ah, okay, that's good.
Should we?
Now I know.
Should we continue with this category?
Yeah, sure.
The city clinched the top spot from New York City in your video, U.S. cities where people drive the least.
Oh. See, I make so many videos. I can never remember what's in my videos. The U.S. cities that drive the least, and it's not New York.
Which was surprising.
I don't know. Is it San Juan?
Yeah.
Oh. What is San Juan? What is San Juan, Puerto Rico? But yeah, okay.
It was very surprising to me, but also it makes sense when I think about it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to give you another question in this category. In your video of top 10 U.S. cities with underrated livability, walkability, and transit, this city ranked number 4.
4? I remember that. I think that's still my most viewed
question.
Too. Like I know what number 1 or 1 and 2 are, and I think I might know what number 3 is. But boy, I'm gonna struggle.
That would have been too easy if we asked you for the number 1.
Yeah. What is Minneapolis?
New Orleans.
New Orleans. That was 4th, huh? Okay. Yeah, I remember that being on there, but I couldn't remember. Yeah, I think I remembered the top 3. Yeah, and it was struggled to number 4. You picked a good one to stump me for sure.
Top 3 were Chicago, Pittsburgh,
and Philadelphia. Yeah, yeah, I know that. I remember the top 3 because they keep popping back up over and over in other similar kinds of lists. So,
well, good job, Sumitra, on stumping Ray. Sumitra with those questions.
Yeah. Yeah, if you'd asked me 1, 2, or 3 on that video, I would have been able to tell you. If I couldn't remember 4.
Yeah, I was also like, oh, I think the 1, 2, or 3 are kind of obvious in a way. And so I was like, oh, the 4th one was kind of a wall to me.
Nice. Okay, can we still do the other category?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Go ahead, Sumitra, it's your turn.
Right,
so I love trivia, by the way. I guess I probably especially love like urbanism transportation trivia, but I like all kinds of trivia, so this is great. It's my dream to be on actual Jeopardy. No offense, like this is just as, just as good, but that's my dream.
So this is a National Transit History trivia. First question is, fueled by Henry Ford's efforts and cheap gasoline, transit's profitability plummeted through the 1920s. But this American city was ahead of its time when it launched the very first municipal railway system in 1912.
First municipal. What is Los Angeles?
Close. It was San Francisco.
It was. Oh, okay. Okay.
Which is, again, I was surprised by. But again, it's municipal railway. Whereas private railways all over the place.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when I was reading about this because like they were all pretty much all private until like much later on, like a few decades after this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're all built as part of like development schemes, right? I mean, they're how you got people to the new subdivisions and the streetcar suburbs, right?
Yeah. All right, next question. For 500 What are we calling it, Sumitra?
$50.
$50. He would later go on to co-found Standard Oil with John D. Rockefeller. But this American industrialist was first known for developing the Florida East Coast Railway, which extended as far south as Key West.
Oh. All right, I'm gonna cheat.
I feel like Floridians should know this.
Is it Flagler?
Yeah,
who's Flagler?
You got it. That's right, yep. Henry Flagler.
So I haven't read it yet, but
oh, nice.
The Tampa Yimby people gave me this book about Flagler, and I was aware of Flagler before that, but I was like, oh yeah, cool. I want to learn more about that, and so
for
I
those
might have been able to come up with it, but.
For those listening online or on the radio on Sunshine, Ray just held up a book called
It's Last Train to Paradise.
Last Train to Paradise
by Les Standiford, Henry Flagler, and the Spectacular Rise and Fall of the Railroad That Crossed an Ocean.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I'm kind of bummed that railroad does not go all the way to Key West. You can't just take a train to Key West.
Right. Okay, last one.
Or to Tampa, right? Like there were like all these streets, like all these rail lines that existed all the way in Florida. All
yeah.
All right, next one. We have actually two more questions.
Oh, okay.
This New York City subway station, beautifully adorned with colored tiles, was officially closed in 1945. Today you can visit the abandoned station only by booking a tour with the New York Transit Museum, which has exclusive access.
What is City Hall?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to see it, but I still
know. I haven't been down there. But yeah, it looks beautiful.
It does. Yeah, pictures look amazing. All right, for 1,000 points. 1,000.
Oh, this is points now.
Sorry.
Right. Don't go cheap on me. I want the St. Pete bucks. I want to know where I can redeem the car-free dollars.
Tennessee Williams' modern classic play, A Streetcar Named Desire, was named after an actual public transit line whose terminus station was Desire Street in this American city.
I'd say what is most likely New Orleans.
Yeah.
You got it.
Well, you won.
Yeah, I did pretty well on things that weren't like related to my channel.
I feel like that's actually good. That means that you're not you're not obsessed with yourself.
No, like I literally make videos and then I kind of forget about them. Like I can't I try to think what video did I make 2 weeks ago, and like I literally have to look it up and go, oh yeah, I remember that.
Which is, I think, healthy too. Kind of have a relationship with your content.
Yeah. For those of you just tuning in, this is Car Free Conversations. And today with us, we have Ray Delahanty, city nerd. And we are about to talk about his recent trip to St. Pete and some of the things he had to say on his channel, which you can find on YouTube and on Nebula. First, though, Ray, why don't you tell us a little bit about why you started the City Nerd channel on YouTube?
Yeah, sure. So it was really a pandemic project, I guess. There was just this is like, March 2020. If you worked in an office or whatever, they sent you home, and you went on month after month of like doing like Zoom calls at your desk in your home office or whatever. And it was fine. Like I loved the projects I was working on and all that, but it kind of wore on me. And then there were some other things that happened like during the pandemic that are kind of personal. And I just kind of made a decision to step away from my job. So my background is I was a project manager for like a big infrastructure firm, but my background is in transportation planning and some traffic engineering, which really informs what I do in my YouTube channel. Anyway, I made a decision to take a sabbatical. I wanted to take like 6 months off and just like, okay, I don't want to work. And I've actually got this list of things that I kind of want to do at that time. And one of the things was I kind of had a notebook with some ideas of some things I either wanted to blog about or whatever. And but during the pandemic, I had like a lot of people, I think I'd probably started watching more YouTube than I had before, just because you're kind of stuck at home all the time and your computer's in front of you. And I kind of thought, oh, YouTube is a good, it's a good vehicle for talking about the things I want to talk about, which were things related to kind of the work I did, except there were topics that like I never got to work on because nobody pays you to do a top 10 list about whatever, right? But those are the kinds of things I would blog about. And I thought, well, it would be hard to blog just because like writing is not that much fun, but making YouTube videos might be fun. So I made one. And I kind of talked myself into, well, I'll make like 8 or 10 of them. I'll try to do them once a week. And I'll do that during my sabbatical. And it'll be good just to like, just to document things for myself. It'll like be a weight off my mind. And I'll say, oh, at least I'll have done it. And if somebody starts watching my channel, it'll almost be kind of like a bonus. And really, I think like 3 weeks in, I got an email notification that I got my first subscriber. And I started getting comments on my videos. And then I started getting more subscribers. As part of my sabbatical, I went and I kind of traveled around Mexico for 4 months. And so when I got to Mexico, I hit 100 subscribers literally the day I got to Mexico. And then when I left Mexico 4 months later, I had like 11,000 or something like that. So it was a really special time. And I really got the sense that, yeah, people are, the things I'm talking about are really resonating with people, and, or they might be entertained. I don't know. Like my videos weren't like very good technically yet. They still kind of aren't, but they've improved a lot. But anyway, so that was kind of the genesis of it. And so once, you know, as I was working my way through my list of like 10 ideas, I started accumulating way more because I would read the comments in my videos and like, I would go, oh, that's an interesting thing to pursue or explore. And so like at this point, like I still keep the same list of ideas, except for now I have like 800 ideas that I haven't done yet. But anyway, so that's kind of the evolution of the channel and like why I started it.
Yeah, and you know, you spoke about your urban planning and kind of project management background in that sector. Where do you source the data that you highlight in your videos? I know like it's different for like each video that you make. And I know some of it is also from your personal travels as well. But like, how do you source your data?
Yeah, because I make different kinds of videos. So like the one that's about St. Pete, I like to make videos where I just go visit a place and I give more of like a qualitative overview and try to think of what story I want to tell about the place I visit. But I also make lots of videos where I use data and analyze it in different ways and create metrics where I can evaluate how cities are doing or metro areas or zip codes or whatever, however granular I want to get with the geography. And usually the data sources I use are either from the US Census, so they have things like income and vehicle ownership and what mode people take to get to work, and so those can be useful. And then I also use, I like to talk about housing affordability, so I can either use Zillow does a Zillow home value index, or they also do like a rent index. But I've been increasingly using, there's a company called Dwellzy that contacted me and say, hey, we'll give you like a huge data set of all the rental properties available and you can sort it by like any geography you want. And so that's been really fun to work with. Like the data set has like 600,000 records and it's like whatever the active rentals are in like whatever the most recent month I asked for was. And right now I'm working with like this past October. I'll probably ask them for a refresh soon. And then what else, like I use Walk Score and Bike Score sometimes, which have been around for a long time, like probably over 10 years. And what else? There are probably some other things I use too, but there are also things that I just kind of measure myself just using, like some, I've done things where like I measure like the number of freeway miles within like a certain geographic boundary. And there is a data source for that too, that the Federal Highways puts together every year. So I can use that if I'm sticking to like a metro area or whatever. They'll give you like the number of lane miles of roadway or highway or whatever. So those are kind of some of the different things. Oh, and the National Transit Database, that's another big one. So the Federal Transit Administration, like there are all kinds of reporting requirements when you have a transit agency that gets federal funding. The FTA makes this huge, rich data set publicly available, so you can look at all kinds of metrics related to how a transit system is used and funded and what the ridership is and what the efficiency is. So I like to use that a lot too. So those are all things that like I've used when I was either consulting or back in like grad school when I was doing like research projects and I became aware of the data set. So I kind of have, when there's a question in my mind, I have a pretty, it's pretty intuitive me to figure out like which data source to go find to generate metrics or whatever.
So I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about your recent video that you made, which featured St. Pete, our humble town, our humble little city, that you featured on your YouTube channel. And your YouTube channel, you now have almost 250,000 subscribers, right?
It's getting real close to that. Yeah, which
is really impressive. So what drew you to make a video with St. Pete as a subject?
I guess even from the outset of my channel, because like right at the beginning, I was in Mexico, and then I think the first full year of the channel after that, I went to LA and New York, and I'm from Seattle, so I went to Seattle, and I made videos about aspects of those places, and then I did even more of that in 2023, and I got to realize, if I go to a city and I can explore it for like 3 or 4 days and shoot video and photography, and as I'm walking around, kind of build a narrative in my head about the things I'm seeing and do a little bit of research and talk to people too. I try to do that for all of these. That not only can I make what I think is a pretty good video that people seem to respond to well, like that type of video does fairly well for me, but also it's just a blast making them because I love to visit cities and think about what makes them different. I like editing them together and figuring out how to use the footage and the images that I shot to kind of tell the story that I want to tell and give kind of my overall impression and the things that I thought were important and different, kind of with a global or at least a national audience in mind. Like a lot of people might not have been to St. Pete, and so I kind of want to give them a sense of what it's like and what maybe is different about it than what they expect. But also knowing that those tend to get a lot of local traction, because the way YouTube works, like if people Google Charlotte, North Carolina, like my video might come up, or if they live in Charlotte, like the algorithm might find them more easily. So that's kind of the genesis of that sort of video that I make. But increasingly, when I go to a city, it's not like I'm thinking, oh, I think I'll go to this city and make a video. It's more like there's a reason I have to go to the city, and while I'm there, I'm going to make a video. And in this case, I got invited out to give the keynote address for the St. Pete Chamber of Commerce's 125th annual meeting, which was extremely flattering and an honor. I said, when they approached me about it, I was like, oh yeah, that's something I could do. I like speaking to audiences, and it's going to give me a chance to travel. And I hadn't been to St. Pete before. So I told them, but I'll probably want to stay out there for like 3 or 4 days so I can do some filming too. And the original idea when I was thinking about it was, oh yeah, I'll be able to get to St. Pete and Tampa, and maybe I can make a video about both cities. And there's just, well, it became apparent very quickly that it's not that easy to get between the two cities, which is also part of the video I made, I think. And so like it became very obvious that, oh no, there's enough going on in St. Pete where I can just make a video about St. Pete, and there's enough to explore where I can just stick around St. Pete for like 3 days filming and thinking about what I'm looking at. So that's kind of the reason I ended up there. You know, I was invited there to give a keynote speech, and then I was able to work on a video while I was there.
That's really cool, because I split my time between St. Pete and Chicago, and I was in Chicago, and I was just on my YouTube app, and I saw your video, but then I saw one of the murals in St. Pete that I know really well, and I was like, wait, when was St. Pete? And then like it just so like your, you know, like the YouTube algorithm just knew that I was looking at stuff in St. Pete and knew that I followed your channel, and so like it just kind of, you know, popped it on my YouTube app, which was kind of really cool. What was your favorite aspect about St. Pete, and what was least favorite?
I think in the video I kind of emphasized that this was something that really makes it different from every other city. It's just how fully, I mean, not completely, it's not an island, but it's very much surrounded by water in a way that really no other US city is. I mean, maybe San Francisco a little bit, maybe Seattle a little bit, but it really is surrounded by the bay on one side and the Gulf of Mexico on the other side. And you know, it's connected to the mainland, but not only that, it's also got, you know, it's got these lakes and nature preserves in it. And so there's definitely a sense that, yeah, this is a city that has a really strong relationship with, the waterfront all the way around. And it really kind of informs, you know, it's so important geographically as far as the ways the city is laid out and what the possibilities are for connecting different areas with transportation. And then not only that, but just like the lifestyle, because you're depending where you are, obviously, but you're always very close to the water, either on the Gulf side or the Bay side. And they're both of those environments are interesting and attractive in different ways. And yeah, I know like St. Pete doesn't literally, I mean, there are other communities there, right? There's like St. Pete Beach or whatever. But still, like you have all those kind of waterfront, different kinds of waterfront environments, like right there all around you, in a way that I just don't think any other US city really has.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and they're all diverse because we've got the beaches on the other side of the Barrier Islands, and then we have, you know, on this side by downtown, we sort of have this downtown waterfront, and then Gulfport's kind of this like almost like little harbor type of town.
Yeah, I didn't get down to Gulfport, unfortunately. It was one of those, like, boy, you run out of time fast. I always feel like, yeah, like 3 days is a lot of time. It's not very much time. It's not enough time to see everything you want to see. Yeah. But you know how it is, like people, not everybody, but in general, people like sunshine, and they like going to the beach, and they like being by the water. And St. Pete really has all of that, in a way that really almost no other U.S. city does. I mean, San Diego is great, but it doesn't have that sense of being fully surrounded the way that St. Pete does. It's a strong part of like San Diego's identity, but not, I don't think, to the same level as it is for St. Pete. And it's just, I just found that very, pleasant is the right word. It is pleasant, almost alluring. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this is, I can see why this would be a really great place to live.
So you talked about some of the natural sort of features of St. Pete and what makes it unique. Can you talk a little bit about what makes, how St. Pete compares to other cities in terms of public transportation and walkability and bike friendliness? And you mentioned this in your video, which if you're listening, you can find on YouTube if you search for City Nerd. But I was wondering if you could sort of talk with us about yeah, how you felt about those aspects of the city.
Yeah. And I always want to give a caveat on this because I'm not able to visit like every different neighborhood in the city. And I realize that like every US city has inequities in like what the infrastructure is and what the transit service is in different parts of the city. And I probably didn't get to all the diverse locations in the city that I would want to give like a full analysis. What I do when I visit a city is I'm usually staying downtown because that's the most convenient place to get transportation connections from. And then I'll usually spend, you know, I want to be efficient with my time and I don't rent a car. I don't like taking an Uber. I like to take public transit or walk or bike if I can bike. And so that largely informs the types of places that I see and that I talk about in my videos. And so in the case of St. Pete, that really meant I'm mostly focused on like the spine of Central Avenue that runs east and west, where, you know, this, you've got the Sunrunner and the Pinellas Trail. And so that really largely informs what I perceived about transit, at least in my visit. I'm kind of aware of what the metrics are as far as ridership. And so there's going to be a little different because there's not going to be as much ridership in areas where you have like lower frequency transit services. But, you know, the Sunrunner runs like every 15 minutes. I'd prefer like every 10, if they could do every 10. That's a little more convenient. You feel more like you can show up and a bus will be there probably in like 5 minutes, honestly, on average, if it runs every 10 minutes, but it might be up to 10 minutes, right? But you always feel like, oh, I could just show up at the bus stop. 15 minutes feels more like, oh, I kind of need to know when the bus is coming so I don't waste a bunch of my time at the bus stop. So that'd be one thing. But like, you know, the vehicles are obvious, they're brand new and nice. I rode it out to St. Pete Beach and back. And the stops are great. I felt like it's really well designed. I did wonder why they didn't run articulated buses. I've heard stories about why that is, but I didn't really confirm them. I didn't want to talk about it in the video. But it looks like the platforms are designed to accommodate that, you know, whenever they can get agreement to actually do that, or they have enough demand or whatever. So, but I enjoyed the Sunrunner. I did, because I went south, to I can't remember the names of the neighborhood, like Old Southeast, and yeah. is it Bayview? And I actually walked all the way down to what's the nature park down there on the lake,
Boyd Hill.
Yeah, I went to Boyd Hill Nature. So I walked all the way down there, and I was kind of running out of time. I thought, well, maybe there's a bus I can catch back. And I think it might have been on a Sunday, so maybe this is unfair, but I think it ran like once an hour. And I'm like, yeah, that's not very convenient. So the Sunrunner is great, but I realized there's probably a lot of challenges for other routes on the PSTA system that aren't the Sunrunner. Yeah, so that was the time I had to take an Uber back from where I was, because I had an appointment I had to keep. And then as far as biking, kind of the same thing. Like the Pinellas Trail is fantastic, mm-hmm. in my opinion. You know, it gets you all the way downtown, and the way they thread the protected two-way bike lane on, is it First Avenue South, through downtown, and then connect it to the off-street portion as you get into the, I don't know, whatever, if you want to call it the gas plant district, or the area around Tropicana Field where the rails are still kind of there. I just think that's really well done. It was being pretty well used. And that was, I think I mostly explored that on a Saturday. But yeah, there were lots of people out using it. And so that looks great. I'm not as familiar with like what the bike facilities are like running north and south to other neighborhoods. You know, they're probably not as good as that. But again, I'm impressed that the city is, because this is really the way you should do transportation land use planning. You should at least start by creating a strong spine where you also create the conditions for adding housing density. And that's all clearly happening up and down the central corridor. There's lots of new density. There are lots of cranes in there, and that's where you have the BRT and the protected bike lanes that get you east and west. So I'm sure there are a lot of parts of St. Pete that don't have all that. But this is I think it's a great start, and it gives you something to build on, hopefully. And the sense I got from talking to folks at the Chamber of Commerce meeting was that, yeah, there is a lot of energy around building on the successes that the city's already seeing in the central corridor. I'm just still blown away. Like, what other like major city Chamber of Commerce is going to invite YouTube like urbanist guy who talks about car dependency to give a keynote at a Chamber of Commerce meeting? Like, I'm waiting for the next city to do that. I don't know if any other city will do that. And so it just impresses me that there's that kind of thinking at, because the Chamber of Commerce in any city is extremely influential in politics, right? And I got to sit next to the mayor too, and that was cool. So I got to hang out with the mayor a little bit. I don't know. I'm just like, you know, you can't draw too many conclusions, but you just that just shocked me about St. Pete that they would think that progressively about land use and transportation, because you just don't see that in practically any U.S. city.
Yeah, I know in your video you mentioned about Cross Bay Ferry and how like it was almost inaccessible to go to the jetty or the port where it docks in St. Pete, and you know, like the infrequent service is something that we have all dealt with on that as well. Do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I don't know, because the Tampa Bay region is, I want to use the word unique because San Francisco Bay is somewhat similar in the way it's laid out with the core cities. And, you know, obviously San Francisco Bay is a more populous region, but they have pretty good ferry service, both up to Marin County and across the Bay to Oakland. They have game day services to both Oracle Park, where the Giants play, and to Chase Center, where the Warriors play. And yeah, like at peak times, I think ferries run like every, I don't know, 40 minutes or so on that system. So actually, when I gave my Chamber of Commerce speech, I gave a few examples of other cities that have viable ferry or water taxi systems. And that one kind of jumps out. And I had wanted to take the Cross Bay Ferry when I was in town, but unfortunately Gasparilla was happening on the Saturday. And so the Coast Guard doesn't allow the ferry to run on Saturday or Sunday, which were the only 2 days I was going to be able to take the ferry. And so I couldn't take it, but I did want to walk down to where the jetty is in St. Pete, just to know where it is. And actually, like, I kind of knew in advance because I had looked it up on the Cross Bay Ferry website. But then, like, when I was kind of in the middle of my day, and I thought, okay, this is a good time to go take a look at that, because I was looking at the schedule thinking, oh yeah, this is when the ferry would be leaving, even though I kind of knew like it wasn't running. And I opened to like Google Maps and asked Google Maps where the ferry docked, and it pointed me to the old location, which is highly convenient. And I walked over there and I was like, wait, there's no ferry there. And I suddenly remembered, oh yeah, it isn't here, is it? It's down like south of the airport. Yeah. Well, I'm still going to walk down there. So there's a part in the video where I actually walk down and of course it's closed because they're not running the service that day. But even so, like it doesn't run what on like Monday or Tuesday, and then it only runs a couple times on like Wednesday and Thursday, and like three times each way, I think, if I remember right, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Maybe it's not even that many. Because I think it ended up being like nine times a week, which is just not, you know, it's useful for something, but you can't. It's certainly not a commuter service if it doesn't run Monday or Tuesday, and it's just not that useful for like everyday things. So, I just kind of felt like It could be really useful, especially if it docked somewhere close to where you could pick up the Pinellas Trail or the Sunrunner. I mean, it's not that hard to bike from the current location, but it's not super convenient to walk from there to like the center of downtown. Frequency, it'd be cool if it ran like once an hour, maybe. I don't know. It's gonna cost a lot more, but a lot more people would use it. And then, yeah, if like I think the jetty location or the docking location in Tampa is pretty good from what I've seen. So yeah, something more central in St. Pete, and then more frequency.
Well, I'm glad that you were spared running into pirates while you're here. But
I was kind of looking forward to it. I mean, I think I could hold my own, right? I don't know, because they're not real pirates, right? The swords are plastic.
Yeah, but they are drunk still, so.
Yeah, but you have to factor that. And I probably would be too, though, so I'd balance it out.
But I have to say, I the Cross Bay Ferry, it's kind of a bummer you didn't get to ride it, because it is a really nice ride. Like, it's actually quite scenic, you know, going across the bay. And then it does drop you off in downtown Tampa at an extremely convenient location, right? Right in downtown. Yep. So I do like that it is a downtown to downtown ferry service. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree with you on all points. Like when they moved the jetty, I was really confused, right? I felt like it, you know, I was like, oh, ridership's going to go down, I feel, you know, because it's less visible, right? That's mm-hmm. another thing. Less visible, so tourists see it less, right? And tourists are not going to see it where it is now.
Yeah.
But I really do hope that we ramp that up. And there have been talks about purchasing a ferry just for us to use, because right now we basically hire a company from Massachusetts to
Provincetown. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So.
Yeah, I heard they actually bring the ferries down.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Yeah. They bring the ferries down from, and I think this year they were delayed because of like some ice storm or something. So yeah, it would be nice if we got our own. And I really hope that we do, because, you know, like you mentioned in your video, there's so much opportunity, right? We're surrounded by waterways. Like mm-hmm. we could be taking advantage of those and not have to sit an hour in traffic on 275 to get between.
Yeah. Well, not only that, like if you look at the San Francisco basis, there are actually two different operators mm-hmm. there that connect up to Marin County or over the East Bay. But there are lots of locations that might be useful for docking in the Tampa Bay region. I don't remember the names of all of them, but I was kind of looking because there are some job centers and kind of like opportunity development areas that are developing now that could benefit from like having a location on the system where they can get to downtown St. Pete or downtown Tampa. There's probably even more potential than just connecting the downtowns, but that's definitely where you would want to start.
I want to talk a little bit about St. Pete as sort of an arts city, which you also talked about in your video. And I was curious how you feel that plays into the attractiveness and livability of an urban center, because it really has been kind of an initiative of the city to be very arts oriented, and it's clear that it's working, because you mentioned it in your video.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because every city has like museums and galleries, but it seems pretty clear that there's a focus in St. Pete on cultivating and attracting galleries and establishing museums. I mean, unfortunately, I didn't get to visit any of these museums. I was only able to like walk by them and try to get a sense of kind of how they integrate into the urban environment. So I went down to like where the Dali Museum is, and on Central where the Chihuly Museum is. But even then, there are lots of smaller museums and galleries, lots of places I went, kind of in closer to downtown. And that kind of combined with kind of felt like for a central city in a US metro area this size, like the public art installations maybe jumped out at me a little more than they usually would in a typical city. Just how prevalent museums were, and how much this city was clearly putting effort into like highlighting them and making them a focus. And there's also like the Warehouse Arts District, I think, to the west of the gas plant district as well. So there's kind of that piece too, that you definitely get a sense of that. Not only do they highlight their kind of established museums like Dolly or Chihuly, but they're kind of there's kind of an intentional function as an incubator of the local art scene too. And so that really comes through when you walk around that kind of central spine area from downtown out to like Grand Central.
And we have a monthly art walk that is pretty large, because it extends all the way down to the Warehouse Arts District now. So the city does coordinate sort of events and functions around that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's like on the art walk night, usually people bike on the Pinellas Trail, because it connects to the Warehouse Arts District and mm-hmm. that 6-block area from 22nd Street South to 28th Street South has really seen a lot of development because of that, because like people have seen it, and then people are like, oh, there are some opportunities here to like develop it further and kind of bring more housing here.
Yeah.
It's all added to the fabric of the city as well.
Oh yeah. And arts, especially the visual arts, are always, or no, and you can feel whatever way you want to feel about this, but they're almost always kind of like a gateway to like gentrification or whatever you want to call it, like increased property values. Like people want to go there because artists are cool, you know, right? Artists, they have this cachet, right? And they make the neighborhoods look cool and edgy, and then people with money want to move in there. So maybe unfortunate or whatever, but it's a dynamic that plays out in a lot of US cities. So I don't know. So I guess it can cut both ways a little bit, but I think overall it tends to be a plus.
We have like a couple of last questions for you. One is, what makes people feel safe to go car free that is missing in St. Pete?
Yeah, I think I guess the way I would answer that question is I think transit frequency would be my first mm-hmm. thing, because I guess if you manage to live like it's gonna be a lot easier to live car free if you're along the central spine going out downtown, Edge District, Grand Central, because you've got the Pinellas Trail and the Sunrunner, even though, you know, I would like the Sunrunner to have better frequency, but you know, I imagine, like, I haven't researched what the prevailing rents are in those areas. I imagine they're higher mm-hmm. than average for the city. So a lot of the more affordable places, and this is true in like every city, right? A lot of the more affordable places are places where you do get the buses that run every 30 or 60 minutes, which is not going to be conducive to being able to go car free. And a lot of those neighborhoods are probably the ones that don't have like protected bike infrastructure that will connect them to like the Pinellas Trail or downtown or whatever the destinations are that they need to go. Great work on that central spine, with the bike and the transit infrastructure, But for people who live outside of that, which I imagine is the large majority of St. Pete residents, it's going to be tougher until there are good biking. When I say biking, I really mean micro mobility. It can be scooters or whatever. But those kinds of connections and transit connections that will get you to like a transfer at Grand Central or directly to downtown or whatever other, and everybody works or goes downtown a lot. So, but whatever the destinations are, that's kind of what you need, for people to feel like they have the liberty to make the choice to, get rid of their car.
We had so many questions to ask you, but we are running short on time and we want to be respectful of your time. I want to first thank you so much for sitting here with us and talking about St. Pete, really, and cities, which is your area's expertise. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you? I mentioned Nebula earlier. Maybe you can give a little plug to what you do on Nebula
as well. Yeah, I mean, the place most people are going to find me is on YouTube, where you just put City Nerd in the as like one word. It probably doesn't matter if you put it as one word or not, but if you put it in the search box, you'll find my channel. And then Nebula is it's a streaming service, kind of more like a Netflix or a Hulu, but it's really it's been built from the ground up by people who are usually still on YouTube, but some people have migrated away from it. So it's kind of like an alternative platform to YouTube, for channels that focus on, I don't know, often like urbanism or technology or culture, to kind of have a place where they can have all their videos available, and then they're ad free and they're promotion free. Like nobody's promoting product. You upload a version of the video that's just clean. That's just the video that doesn't have anything else in it. So it's great for that, but it is a subscription service, right? And so instead of getting it for free, quote unquote, on YouTube and having to watch ads or watch the YouTuber like promote like razors or VPNs or whatever, then you just pay. I think it ends up being like $2.50 a month, and you get to watch, I think there are like 200 creators on there right now. That there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, my stuff's okay, but there are better ones on there. So, but anyway, that's what Nebula is all about. So you can find my stuff on Nebula as well.
Oh, well, awesome. I'm going to check on Nebula now, because $2.50 is very affordable. That's
like... Yeah. I think it's like it's $30 a year, I think. You can sign up for like a $30 annual, or you can pay like $3 a month. So you save like $6 if you sign up for the annual, I think is what the deal is.
All right. Well, thank you so much again. Thank you for being on our show. This is Car Free Conversations. And we were here with Ray Delahanty, City Nerd. If you're listening to this on the radio, you can find us online as well. If you look for us, we have a podcast online that you can find. And we'll be posting a video of this as well. Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Car Free Conversations.
Please follow us on social media. We are Car Free St. Pete on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.